day, listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in today to CIDI's daily news show, Township's Daily News Bits. And I am your host, Taylor McClure. Starting yesterday, November 21st, a province-wide public sector strike kicked off, with provincial, regional, and local unions banding together to demand that the provincial government begin investing in the education and healthcare system and social services here in the province. This collective of unions refer to themselves as the Common Front, and so far there are plans to strike up until November 23rd. CIDI had the chance to speak with Justin Forrester, teacher at Massivania High School and union representative for the school, which falls under the Quebec Provincial Association of Teachers, all about the strike mandate and what teachers are looking for in their classrooms.
Justin, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with CIDI. You know, we're standing here in front of the Pavillon des Sports near Massivania High School, where there is a gathering and a group of teachers who are here to strike. And I wanted to get some comments from some of the teachers that are here today. And just to give our community a better understanding as to why people are gathering and coming together for a strike mandate.
During a strike, I think it's important that we be visible to the community, that people see that we're out here trying to fight for not only our rights, but for the rights of our students. I think there's a lot on the table. It's not just all about salary increase. While that is a factor, we have to look at factors such as class size. We have to look at factors such as support for special needs students in particular. So there's a lot on the table that we're fighting for and trying to make sure that we're able to attract some of the best and the brightest into the teaching profession, the other professions that are part of the Common Front as well.
And from my understanding, you were in negotiations with the government, the Common Front, and the government did put a proposal forward, but it was not accepted. So I was wondering why this was not accepted and why the Common Front decided to continue going and to continue striking.
The proposals by the government definitely are lacking. They don't really seem to be serious in what they are proposing. If you were to look at salary, a 10.3% increase over 5 years is far below the level of inflation, probably just for 2 or 3 years. So nothing that is acceptable. And then when you look at the idea of taking away codes for students, for example, where you could have multiple students in a class that are on the autism spectrum or that have various behavioral difficulties or have reading difficulties, all of those things would definitely lower the quality of education that we'd be able to offer to students.
So essentially, it's not really, like you mentioned, it's not just about salary, but ensuring that the conditions in the classrooms are beneficial for the students that are there.
That is correct. It's definitely about working conditions that not only benefit the teachers, but definitely benefit the students. If you don't have a classroom that is conducive to learning, then of course you don't have the optimal conditions that anyone is looking for our young people.
And as a result of the lack of investment on part of the government within the education system, what are some of the challenges or impacts that have resulted at this? I'm sure you've seen some challenges, or as a teacher, you've experienced some challenges at MVHS as a result of lacking these resources within the classroom.
Well, you do sometimes find it difficult to get to all the students that you do want to help. So definitely there are students that could receive more help from the adults in the building, but we can't get to everybody to the extent that we'd necessarily want to. We obviously are always doing our best to provide the best education possible, but there is definitely far more that could always be done.
Great. And as of right now, I know that the plan is to strike today, the 22nd, and the 23rd. But if there is no negotiation on the table, are there plans for other strikes moving forward as well? I didn't know if you were able to comment on that.
That's something that's more decided higher above than just the local level. But the Common Front and our Union of QPAT for Teachers has indicated that definitely further strikes would continue to occur up to and including an unlimited general strike.
Perfect. Well, those are really all the questions that I had for you, Justin. I just wanted to get some comments from the teachers that were here today, but please feel free to mention anything else that you think our community should be aware of when it comes to this situation.
We're just hoping that everyone out there supports us and know that we are there for the students and not just here for self-serving interests.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We also had the chance to speak with Tamara Porter from the Township's Regional Union of Support Staff about the unique challenges that support staff face in their schools while trying to provide important resources for students.
Tamara, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with CIDI. We are here today in front of the Pavillon des Sports near Massivania High School, where teachers and support staff have gathered together for a strike mandate. The support staff, one perspective that I haven't really been able to collect so far, and I really just wanted to get some comments from you as to why this is such an important time for not only teachers, but the support staff that, you know, play a really big role at our schools here in the Eastern Townships.
Well, they definitely do. Support staff is almost half of the staff in a school. You see them everywhere. Support staff really have their own particular conditions. You know, if you compare it to teachers or other professionals in the education system, they're of the lowest paid of everyone. The average support staff salary is actually $26,500. We have conditions where our staff, most of them don't even work full-time schedules. They're working two or three different jobs, even just to have enough pay to feed their families, to get by. And they work hard. They're working all day, but they're getting part-time salaries and part-time conditions.
Like you said, you have your own set of challenges apart from the teachers here. And that's really why I wanted to come and talk to the people that were down here today to really highlight what you've been facing in the classrooms over the last couple of years. So I was wondering if you'd be willing to highlight some of the challenges that have emerged for you and other support staff at MVHS as a result of not having the support financially and otherwise within your schools.
Definitely. I mean, most of our schools, I'm sure most people can attest, are understaffed, and with the needs in the classrooms always seems to be increasing, the violence that they're facing in the classrooms. When the conditions are not there, you can't find the staff members, especially, like I said, with the jobs that don't have the greatest of conditions to staff. Schools without janitors, schools that are missing special education technicians and handicapped student attendants. When they're lacking, our students aren't getting those services. The teachers want those services for their kids, and they can't even find enough people to give the services that the students need.
So you really just want to have the right working conditions to bring more support staff into the classrooms and to have full-time positions so it attracts more people.
Exactly. If we can attract the best, we have the best, we just need more. You know, when you can attract people with really nice conditions, everyone loves their jobs and loves to work, but it's hard when the conditions are so, when you can go to another place and get a 40-hour a week job, and you can only find something that's 20 hours. Support staff, the grand majority are laid off during the summer. In the East, we have bus drivers also. They're also laid off doing morning and night shifts. You know, a daycare is doing three split shifts during the day, morning, noon, and night. When they don't feel valued, when they don't feel like their conditions are good, they're not going to stay with us, and we need them to stay. We feel sometimes they don't put the effort into doing that, into really putting the value on what full-time positions would mean to the system and what it would mean for the people who work so hard every day.
Yes.
I wish I had a crystal ball and knew all the reasonings behind the fact that they don't offer the full-time jobs. For sure, they're going to say maybe the funding's not there, but there's far more benefits.
Well, those are really all the questions that I had for you, Tamara. I really just wanted to speak with the support staff as well, because like you said, you face your own set of challenges, but please feel free to mention anything else that you think would be important for our community to be aware of.
Just know the support staff in your schools are there, and they love the kids. They want these services. They want the conditions, but they want to be able to be there for the kids.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Tamara. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for taking the time to see our side of this strike as well.
In preparation for this week's strike mandate, CIDI also spoke with Nicholas Lamite, longtime teacher at Knowlton Academy and union representative for the school, a couple of weeks back, to go into more detail about the challenges that the education system is facing and why it's so critical for the government to invest in the education system at this time.
The teachers here at Knowlton Academy are part of the ATA, the Appalachian Teachers Association, which is part of the CSQ and the FSE, which is a regroupment. We call it the Common Front. And we're 90,000 teachers in the Common Front, which is basically about 420,000 public sector workers. And right now, our collective agreement ended last March. And for the past months, we've been trying to sit with the government to negotiate. And this is my sixth collective agreement negotiation. So I've done this dance before. And every time we're doing this, there's always a lot of concern. We're always trying to better our working conditions. And that's the thing that we need to get people to understand. Yes, there are salary, wages, there are certain conditions that we need to consider. But we're all very passionate and dedicated individuals in the education system. And we want what's best for the children we work with. And that's why we felt it's important that we go out, we picket, that we be seen, that we be heard, and that we send an important message to everyone.
Now, as an educator, teacher, or staff member of KA, what is it that you're looking for from our government officials exactly? You're speaking a little bit about working conditions, but what sort of action do you think needs to be taken at the provincial level to improve these conditions?
Give us the means to do our job properly. That's the biggest concern. We're talking sometimes about the size of classes. Sometimes we're stuck with more students than we can handle. You have to understand that looking at students, it's not only the number of bodies you have in a classroom. You have some children with learning disabilities that mathematically mean that they're not worth one case. They're worth more than one. Sometimes it's 1.5 or 2. And if you have 10 of those students with special needs in your class, you have 10 bodies, but you have 20, the equivalent of 20 individual needs, mm-hmm. because the load is so important. So we're asking the government, please provide us with the means, the financing to hire people, whether they be a psychologist, occupational therapist, have aides in the classroom, so that we can meet the needs of our students. And that's a big concern. We're always expected to do more with less. Mm-hmm. And again, this being my sixth collective agreement and negotiation through the years, I can see that some things have improved, but for the most part, we're speaking to individuals who are so far away from the classroom, they're in their offices, they don't realize what the demands are, they don't realize the needs, they don't realize that on a daily basis we have students who are in crisis, whether it's because of a disability, behavioral issues, home life situations. And it's more and more challenging. So I'm not always working as an educator. I'm sometimes having to put the hat of a social worker or work as a psychologist or a mediator. And I'm not necessarily trained to wear all these hats, you know, if you understand what I'm saying. I want to teach. Okay? That's what I want to do in a school. So provide me with an environment. Help me. Give me the tools that I can actually do my work properly.
And Nick, how long have you been a teacher exactly here at KA?
I started teaching back, my first teaching contract in general was in 97, 98, the year of the ice storm. And I started teaching at Nolan Academy in the year 2000.
And so I know that, like we were talking about this before we had our interview, you know, the job has changed over time. So why is it so critical for the government to invest in the education system at this time?
Well, if you think that education is expensive, think about the people that are not educated and people that are having a hard time. Had they not learned to read, write, and count, we want people to have this knowledge to be able to be citizens and participate in society. And it's, you know, it's an investment, investment in teaching everyone, and everybody should have access to that. So the job has changed over the years. Yes, technology has some very positive impacts on how we can do our work. It should be able to alleviate a lot of the tasks that we have to do. On the other hand, we're dealing with emails. We're dealing with all sorts of training for technology. We're having to modernize what we do. But we're still having to connect with students and develop relationships. And that's also something that's very, very important in keeping kids in school and keeping them interested in their education.
And as someone who's experienced this and who's going through a sixth round of negotiations, you know, how do these challenges that are experienced in the classroom impact the educators here and support staff that are working hard to provide students education here at KA?
Well, see it this way, that instead of dispensing curriculum and teaching and getting kids to experience what you're there to get them to experience, you're having to manage someone because their behavior is not adequate, because they're having a hard time understanding, they're having a hard time keeping control, because they have other issues, whether again they be at home or due to disabilities. And so it's very, very heterogeneous in your class. You have so many different needs to meet. It's a puzzle. And the crisis that we've seen, again, in the 20-some years that I've been at Nolan Academy, I've seen a change in behavior. I've seen a change in how students develop relationships, how they interact with each other, and how they interact with adults. It's overwhelming sometimes. You're confronted with situations that you never thought you would see, mm-hmm. but you're having to manage it. You're having to target everybody in the classroom, and you can no longer do a single program for everybody. You're having to split your job and addressing the needs of everybody. And it's clearly extremely complex. We're hoping the government will want to sit down. But again, it's a dance. People are going to sit down and discuss certain things. We don't feel that the government is listening and really open to what we're suggesting. They have a line of directives they're trying to follow, but I don't see why that hasn't evolved, this whole process of negotiation. I think it's important to have it, but being my sixth time, it's the same thing that's happened over and over again. I would like to see things evolve. I would like people to sit down and recognize that education is super important and just to put the means at our disposal for us to do our work.
And so until the government responds, essentially, you're going to continue trying to send out this message to them.
We don't really have a choice. We're doing it for the children. We're doing for everybody that we work with and work for. And like I said before, if you think that education is expensive, think about not having all the knowledge that you need to be able to live as a concerned and involved citizen in the community.
Well, those are all the questions that I had for you, Nick, but please feel free to mention anything else that I may not have touched on that you think would be important to make the community aware of.
Feel free to join us. Feel free to encourage us. Don't be afraid to come and ask questions to the teachers. We're not trying to hide anything. We don't have a secret agenda of any kind. Of course, we're not at liberty to go and discuss it, and not everybody is interested in what we have to say. But speak to your teachers, get to know them, and get involved in the school. And you can see firsthand some of the needs that need to be met in our school so that we provide everybody equal chances and equal opportunity.
Well, thank you so much again, Nick, for chatting with CIDI. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Anytime. Thank you.
José Fréchette, who is the Vice President for the Alliance du Personnel Professionnel et Technique de la Santé et des Services Sociaux, APTS for short, highlighted the challenges within the healthcare system and the importance of improving the working conditions in Quebec's hospitals, CLSCs, etc., to retain staff and to provide services to the population.
It's important because we've been sitting at the bargaining table with the government for the past year, and nothing has really evolved with the negotiations. So it's very important for us to pass the message that we are serious and we need to have good working conditions for people working in health and social services.
Yes, that was actually one of my major questions for you was, what are some of the challenges that, you know, healthcare workers and the healthcare system has faced over the years as a result of this lag in negotiation? I'm sure you've experienced these challenges yourself.
Yes, indeed. You know, for the past over 30 years, the people have been working hard for the government. Every time there's cutbacks, it's always on the shoulders of the health and social service workers. So it's about time that the government recognizes that the work that is done in the hospitals and all the centers like youth protection or CLSCs or whatever. So it's important that there's some recognition and also that they do consider what has been done and the work that has been done in the past year. You know, while we were during the pandemic, a lot of our workers were doing all the analysis and were there working hard to give the services to the population. And right now, what the government is offering is nothing for those workers. It's about time that the government gives good working conditions for the workers in the health and social service system.
So what are you looking for from the government exactly? I know that everyone has their different reasons for taking part in this strike mandate. So what are you hoping to see happen?
Well, what we hope is real negotiation. We want the government to listen to what we're asking and our solutions, because we do have some solutions, and we've been telling the government that, you know, if we increase some working conditions, for example, that we're asking for a little bit more vacation, because people do need to take a little bit more time off to get better services. We're also asking for the premiums for people working the evening shifts, the night shifts, the weekends, that the premiums are improved to have more people working for those shifts. And also overtime, more recognition. But, you know, we're asking more money for overtime. So that's not so the government stops asking for overtime. We need to hire more people to attract people in the system so that there's more people giving the services to the population. And another reason we're on strike is also because we do care about the system. We care about the hospitals and all the health and social service system. And we want people to have better services. And that means more better working conditions and more people working at giving those services.
Yeah, so you really just want the government to invest in the working conditions so that it attracts more people to work in our hospitals and to work in our CLSCs.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what are your hopes with all of this? You know, the strike, from my understanding, for your union, the APTS, from my understanding, is taking place until November 23rd. But if things don't move after that, are there any plans to continue striking?
Okay, if you're asking what we're hoping for, we're hoping to have a settlement in December. We're hoping to have to sign with the government and have a good settlement with the collective agreement in December. If not, well, we have to do what we have to do. So there'll be more strike days with our workers. But that's not what we're wishing. We're really wishing that the government hears what we're asking for and considers the people that are working and that are giving their heart and soul in the work, and that they get more working conditions and that they listen to our demands, not only the demands from the government.
Does this encompass everyone that's working in our hospitals? So does this mean that the services are on hold right now? How is this impacting the access to services, the strike mandate exactly? That was something that I haven't had the chance to speak with someone about yet.
We there's a lot that we still have to give what we call essential services.
Okay.
So there are still services. The hospital is still open and we're still giving those services. But it's just that it's a bit slower because people are absent for, some percentage. So it's different. Depends on the job title.
Okay.
And where they work. But it's different. But there's still services. People can still show up for emergency and can still have their... a lot of them still have their appointments.
Well, those are really all the questions that I had for you, Jose. I really just wanted to get a better understanding as to, you know, why the healthcare workers are taking part in the strike mandate. But please feel free to mention anything else that you think would be important for people to be aware of.
Well, you know, what is important is that we do care about the services and we do care about the public system, and we want the public system to continue. But we also need that the people that are working there have better working conditions so that they stay and they're happy to give those services too.
Well, thank you so much, Jose. I really appreciate your time. I know that you're super busy, but thank you so much for taking the time to comment with us very quickly. I appreciate it.
No problem. Quite welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into today's episode. That's it for now, but tune in tomorrow for more daily news. We hope that you enjoyed our conversation with Justin Forrester, Nicholas Lamite, Tamara Porter, and Jose Frechette. CIDI hopes to continue following up on this story, so stay tuned. Township's Daily News Bits is a program sponsored by Local Journalism Initiative.